Every woman in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon having seven heads and ten horns and seven crowns upon his head. And for his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven, and did cast unto the earth, and the dragon stood before the woman, Israel, which was ready to be delivered, for to devour her child as soon as it was born. And she brought forth a man-child, she being Israel, who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up unto God and to his throne. And the woman, Israel, fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared to God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. That makes sense to me. Israel, you see, brought forth a man-child. Now the man-child is caught up into the throne. He's caught up into God. And after that, the woman flees into the wilderness where she has a place prepared to God. So this is a picture then of Israel. And then, That's a good point. Larkin well illustrates it in one of his pictures in his book. I think it's a dispensational truth. It might be Daniel, but I think it's a dispensational truth. The Old Testament prophets stood here. As you read the Old Testament prophecies, here's what the prophets could see. The prophet could see the mountain peaks. You ever stand on top of a mountain, look up or down the range, and see the peaks. But the prophet couldn't see all the valleys. You know? You got some valleys in here. In the Old Testament, let me illustrate a little further. The Old Testament prophet stood here and he prophesied the first coming of Christ. Right? He could see that. God showed it to him. So here it is. Alright? And he could see the tribulation. Daniel 70th week. Amen? The abomination of desolations. Daniel saw that. And he could see the second advent. You see that line. God showed it to him. Zechariah. I mean, what he couldn't see is the apostolic day. Couldn't see that. And the church age. And what he couldn't see are some of the details of the tribulation. You know, he didn't have, just like the one we covered tonight, he didn't see Moses as the other second witness. He couldn't see Moses over here. God let him in on part of it. It's what we call progressive revelation. Such a thing still exists, I believe. Even though we have a completed book, we just don't have the handle on the whole thing. There's some things that those tribulation saints are going to get that we don't get. There's some things that are going to come to be made clear and known about Hebrews and James and 1st, 2nd, 3rd John and 1st, 2nd Peter and Jude that I just can't quite get my handle on. You know, I just, you know, I shake my head and say, I don't get it. They'll get it. Somebody over there is going to get it. You know what I mean? There's going to be a Larkin, there's going to be a Schofield, there's going to be a Rutland, there's going to be a somebody over there that's going to get it and put the final pieces of the thing together. It's already in the book, but there's some things over there that are just hard to get. That's what they could see. So anyway, here we are back in verse 6. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared to God that they should feed her there 1,260 days. The wilderness is what?
American history now. But don't tell me that. This
one, oh, really? United States, Europe, Asia, Africa. What were they? Africa. That's no, not what I want. Asia. That's not what I want. I want a map of Israel. Where am I going to find it, Dick? Oh, hey, man. Some of you got to lug that up here. What do you guys? Let's tell you that thing. Israel, this little pink spot right here. If you're in the back, you're just out of luck, probably, unless you got awful good eyes. But this little pink spot, present-day Israel. All right, now this little blue spot right up here is the Sea of Galilee, Mount Hermon, right up here, Sidon and Tyre, in present-day Lebanon. You know, you read about them in the Bible all the time. They got all kinds of curses on them. Particularly over the book of Ezekiel, you read about that. All right, now here's the Dead Sea, right along here. This purple strip right up here is what we know as the Golan Heights right now. And just below the Dead Sea in present-day Jordan, this is not a present-day map. You know, this has got Mesopotamia, Armenia, all that stuff. But right down here in present-day Jordan, see, there's Petra right there. Petra is a hiding place for the Jews in the tribulation. It's in the land of Edom. If you read your Bible, you read about the land of Edom. That's where it is. And this is the wilderness area that Israel is going to flee into as a result of the attack of the Antichrist upon her when he breaks his peace covenant and begins to aggressively pursue her, the woman, you see. And attempt to kill him, which he'll be successful in killing him. So they'll be scattered throughout this wilderness. And keep in mind, this is the same wilderness that they came through when they came out of Egypt, history repeats itself. If there's ever a Bible principle, it's that history repeats itself. They came out of Egypt, they crossed the Red Sea, they came across the Sinai Peninsula, they came up through this wilderness, and their wilderness wanderings were primarily concentrated right here in this area, where they're going to be. And then they came up and around behind the Dead Sea and crossed the Jordan River right here and went east into west into the land. Jericho is right there just north of the Dead Sea. It's off a little, maybe you can't see, but I can see pretty good. So this area right in here is where they're going to be concentrated during the tribulation. Now I want you to notice something. Verse 6 again. And the woman fled into the wilderness where she hath a place prepared to God that they should feed her there 1,260 days. It's two kinds of feeding, evidently, that's going to be taking place for Israel during the tribulation. One is a miraculous feeding. Look these verses up. Somebody look up Micah chapter 7, verse 14. Who's going to look that up? Micah chapter 7. So wait, come on, raise your hand. Look it up, will you? Come, look it up. Micah 7, 14, 15. Jeremiah chapter 50. Mark, Jeremiah chapter 50, verse 19 and 20. Ezekiel chapter 20. There's too many verses there. Forget it. We'll just stick with Micah and Jeremiah. You got Micah? Okay, keep looking. It's in the apocrypha. That's there. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, it is. You got it. This mountain face. Just skip the whole church age. You know? That's exactly what it is. You sure are right. Okay, you got it? Verses 14, 15, Micah 7. Read them to us. Right, now, did you get that? That's a prophecy long after they came out of Egypt, and God is once again talking about feeding them in the land of Basin exactly like He did when they came out of Egypt before. Okay, Jeremiah 15, 19-20. Mark. Right, once again, God makes a reference to feeding Israel. Do you recall with me when Jesus was on the Mount of Temptation and the devil said, "All right, why don't you, you're hungry. You've been fasting 40 days and 40 nights. Why don't you turn these stones into bread?" Jesus refused to do it, not because it was necessarily the wrong thing to do. It was at the wrong time. Israel is going to be miraculously provided for by God, manna from heaven, stones into bread, whatever, during the tribulation. Point number one, just like they were when they came out of Egypt, God miraculously provided for them. Interestingly enough, if we have time, when we get toward the end of the book of Revelation, we're going to examine the root of the second advent. We're going to discover that Jesus Christ is going to take, from all appearances, the same route into the land of Canaan as the Jews took out of Egypt. A lot of people think, well, he just took 7 feet down the Mount of Olives, appeared from the Lord, bang, 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 bang. That's all it took. There's no more to it than that. History repeats itself. Very interesting. So they're down in the land of Edom being miraculously provided for by God, but that's not all. Look with me in verse 14. And to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness into her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time from the face of the serpent. Well, we have 42 months. We have 3.5 years. We have 1,260 days. Now we got a time, times, and half a time. One, two is three, and half a time, 3.5. God has a lot of different ways of saying the same thing. All right, now she's flying into the wilderness on the wings of a great eagle. Well, maybe it's an eagle as big as Jonah's whale. Maybe it's a natural, supernatural type eagle. And then maybe it's something else, like many flying squadrons during World War II and so on, if they assume names like the Screaming Eagle. Just maybe it's a giant airplane. Notice the verse says they in verse 6, where that they should feed her there. Who are the they? Matthew 25. See, it's pretty hard to complete the book of Revelation without the book of Matthew. You know, we've been back in Matthew several times tonight. Now, Matthew 24, we got a tribulation. Matthew 25, Jesus begins to illustrate that kingdom and say. Verse 31. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory. And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as the shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. I know this is the conclusion of the whole thing, folks. The Son of Man comes into his glory. Before him are gathered the nations. So this is what we refer to as the judgment of the nations. Just like so many things in your Bible, there are 7 resurrections. Really. The 7 baptisms. The 7 judgments. This is the judgment of the nations. And this is at the end of the tribulation. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Where do we get this saying, separating the sheep from the goats? Then shall the king say unto them on the right hand, Come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. What kingdom are they inheriting? Millennial kingdom. They're being ushered into the millennial kingdom. These are earthbound, corruptible body type of people walking right into the kingdom. Whether they're saved or unsaved as individuals is not the issue in Matthew 25, is it? It's not the issue. That don't make it mean what it doesn't say. What is the issue? Well, verse 35, For I was a-hungered and you gave me meat. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you took me in. Naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee a hungered and fed thee, or thirsty and gave thee drink? When we saw we thee a stranger and took thee in, or naked and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick or in prison and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me. Then shall he say unto also them on the left hand, Depart from me, you cursed in everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was a hungered, and you gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you took me not in. Naked, and you clothed me not. Sick, and in prison, and you visited me not. Then shall they also answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee a hungered, or a thirst, or stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister unto thee? Then shall he answer them, saying, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you did it not to one of the least of these, you did it not to me. And they shall go away in everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal. Did you notice there's not one thing in that passage that has anything to do with call upon the name of the Lord and your life shall be saved? For with the heart man believeth unto righteousness, with the mouth confession is made unto salvation. Nothing like that there, is it? Nothing like John 3:16 and Romans 10 and 1 John 5. There's nothing like that there. Nothing. The whole thing is predicated on how did you treat these? Who's these? It's his brother. That's what the text says. My brother. These who are his brothers. Jesus to find his brethren early in the book, he's Israel. And so, they fed them. Revelation 12, 6. Who is the they? The sheep nations. That's who. So this is a judgment of nations. So all the nations that are aligning themselves against Israel are putting themselves in a rather precarious position as they someday face the judgment of the nation. So the indication is that God is going to use some nations, some friendly nations, to help Israel out during the tribulation. This in itself is a picture of the fact that not everyone is going to be in the camp of the Antichrist. Of course, we learn that as we study Daniel. We find out that there are really, the world is going to be divided into four basic divisions: west, east, south, and north. The western kingdom, the most powerful, the most technically advanced, is going to be primarily the kingdom of the Antichrist. But there are going to be other kingdoms. And from who knows where, some friends of Israel are going to surface. Now, you know, I don't know. My idea of the thing is that the great eagle is nothing more or less than 747. You know? Flying around, flying her into a hiding place, into the wilderness. You know, the greatest airlift in history, huh? And that she is going to be provided for in a miraculous way there. Now, verse 7. There was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels and prevailed not, neither was their place found any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. Up to this point, Satan has had access to heaven, just like he had access in the days of Job. How do we know that? Well, because in the next verse he's called the accuser. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now has come salvation and strength in the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they loved not their lives unto the death. A great many martyrs in this whole thing. The devil is seeking every conceivable way to destroy Israel. Israel has always been a target of Satan. Why? Israel is that which produced, from a human viewpoint, the seed. Well, God produced the seed, but it was through Israel that Christ came, and Christ has been the one who has the title to the kingdoms, and the battle has been for the kingdoms throughout all the centuries. The kingdoms are the focal point. And so the battle between Christ and the devil is over the kingdom. Now, if he can destroy Israel, he can destroy the recipient of the kingdom. Yes?
Do you think the casting out of Satan signals the end of the
resurrection of Jesus
Christ?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I do. The accuser of the brethren is gone. I think we talked about that one right there. You know, what an active part he's going to have to do. It's a little tough to say, and I'm not sure. And, you know, but there are some implications. The accuser of the brethren, he's gone. All right, so then, consequently, all of the wrath of Satan is now focused on Israel. It's going to make Auschwitz and all the rest of them look like kids' play. What happened in World War II Germany is but a type of the tribulation. It's a picture. I figure it's about a generation prior to the real thing. The only thing you got to figure out is which generation. 25-year generation, 40-year generation, or which generation. I figure it's about a generation prior to the real thing. Okay, so verse 12. Therefore rejoice, ye heavens, and ye that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil is come down into you having great wrath, because he knoweth that he hath but a short time. Again, a picture that we're at the end of the tribulation. He hath but a short time. And when the dragon saw that he was cast into the earth, he persecuted the woman which had brought forth the man-child. And to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for time, times, half the time, from the face of the serpent. How did he try to destroy her? This is interesting. And the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away in the flood. So the devil's trying to destroy Israel by a flood. I used the Dead Sea. Whole great deal of water. Right here, just south of the Dead Sea, is where Israel is holed up in the land of Edom. There's Petra directly south. They've been working for several years, engineers, on trying to figure out how to drain the Dead Sea. So they can give it the mineral wealth underneath. The idea of the thing is, from a human viewpoint, the engineering blueprint as to how to blow that south end of the Dead Sea out and let it run out of that wilderness are already in existence. Coincidence, eh? You know, now that's the only way maybe there's another way. Probably 100 infinite possibilities, but isn't it interesting that they're going to be in the land of Edom, immediately adjacent to the Dead Sea that they've been talking about emptying and draining and all the rest of it? Coincidence, eh? So he's going to try to destroy Israel with a flood. Why would the devil want to use a flood other than it's a convenient situation because of the geographical position?
Why would he not use the flood to destroy the world of Genesis and a lot of Satan's followers, might say, were killed at that time by the flood?
Yep. Got it. Satan's crowd was wiped out by a flood. They died like men. Psalm 82. What? Another one, Pharaoh and the dead Red Sea. Pharaoh, Egypt, picture the world, right? Probably will be. A real smuggling ring. An underground system that has never been paralleled. There are going to be some friendly nations toward Israel that are going to help her out, and that is going to be their salvation. Not an individual spiritual soul type salvation, but a corporate national salvation that will usher them into the kingdom. And then each man, when he's in the kingdom, will have to deal personally with God on about his own spiritual condition. But it will give him the privilege to walk into the kingdom. Don't confuse the two. The judgment of the nation, he said. Keep in mind that salvation, exactly as you and I know it, in this day is going to be a different ballgame. It's a whole different system. Yes?
Are these nations
I don't know, Jim. I'm sure that if you had the handle on it somewhere in this Bible, you could find exactly what the nations are. But I don't know which ones they are. Well, it could very well be that Egypt may have some involvement. And it could very well be that these Camp David talks and all the rest of it are a forerunner. coincidence, eh?
You're a base nation. But God never eliminates Egypt like he does the Philistines, the Moabites, the Edomites, and several others. So there's Egypt kind of ends on a positive note. Well, in verse 16, God miraculously delivers them from the flood. The earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood, which the dragon cast out of his mouth. And the dragon was wroth with the woman and went to make war with a remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. It appears to be a twofold faith and work situation. Keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. Faith and work. Mixed up there together. Alright, so toward the end of the tribulation, sometime in the latter half, it would be difficult if not impossible to pinpoint exactly when in that 3.5 year span, but sometime in the latter half of the tribulation, Satan is cast out of heaven after a great war with Michael. We'll see that same kind of thing in the book of Daniel. We'll see that type in history in Daniel. And now he no longer has access to heaven. He can no longer accuse the brethren for whatever reason. He comes in all of his vengeance and wrath and is vehemently displayed toward Israel, as it has been in the past, but even in a far greater way than it ever has been. Yes, David. Yeah. He knows them. He refuses to believe all of them, but he sure knows them. Which is the point in itself. There are a lot of people around that know the scripture but don't believe it. Just confirms what Jesus said, you're of your father the devil. If you're of that persuasion, you know it, don't believe it, then you're just like another fellow, the devil, right? Of course, they delight when you tell them that. Any other questions? No questions? Next week, Revelation chapter 13, the beast, Antichrist, off into Daniel. And we're going to spend quite a bit of time in Daniel before we get back into Revelation, after we do chapter 13. Okay, good night. God bless you. Glad you came.